Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, welcome back to me. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tay. How you doing? You all snowed in up there?
Oh, man. It's like a foot of snow on the ground. It's, gotta go work a shift today, and I don't know how I'm gonna dig my way through. I'm gonna have to tunnel there.
And it's still coming down, huh?
Still coming down. It's been coming down all day. We've got an early recording to get this in before we gotta go.
Well, we're
looking forward to it.
Well, we had the snow yesterday. It wasn't quite as much, though, just a couple inches. But we got the cold behind it today. It's 8 degrees outside, and it's not even going to reach double digits till noon.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's... We are. It's about 18 here, and I think the next couple days it's going to be below 30. I just hate when the snow comes down, it's pretty, but it gets so gross so fast up here that it's just like... Give me a snow day, and then immediately after, give me like a 45 degree day to melt it all and make it go. Like,
well,
I want it to stay.
Well, especially when you get a heavy snow, because in New York there's nowhere to put it. Everything is filled up with cars or buildings or whatever, and there's nowhere to push the snow to except on top of people's stuff.
Well, I'm now I'm walking to work right now, but back in the day I used to always bike when I worked farther away, and that's where they would push the snow into the bike lanes. So it's like, you can't bike anywhere. There's a big pile of snow, and then it's like, what? Then the cars are even angrier that you're in the lane. It's not safe. Like, that's not a solution. You wouldn't put it in the other lane of traffic, so why would you put it in the bike lane? That's for traffic just as much.
Well, apparently it's the lesser of the evils.
Well, New York historically hates its cyclists, so it's,
yeah.
Nothing new there, but I think if I didn't have to work today, today would be a great day to have a snow day and make some cocktails. So get something to warm you up, I guess.
Yeah, you just concoct anything, huh?
Yeah. So I thought today we could talk about it's sort of another one of these lost spirits. It's been revitalized recently, but I don't think quite as many people are familiar with it as could be. I don't think you haven't heard of it before, have you, Dad?
No, I mean, of course, I'd heard of the general name, but I had not heard of this particular kind.
Well, we're talking today about Old Tom Gin. I thought you're an old Tom. This is an old Tom. Maybe
I am an old Tom, and I don't know about this gin.
This is your gin.
Yeah, I guess so. It's named after it. It's not like your old Uncle Bob or something. This is old Tom's gin.
Uncle Bob gin is a different gin. That's
Bob's your
don't
uncle.
Want to drink that. That comes from a bathtub. Uncle Bob's bathtub gin. Old Tom gin is sort of a confusing category of gin.
It's not a brand. That's what I thought at first, that this was a brand called Old Tom's gin, but it is a style of gin that was developed.
Sort of a style, but also not really a style. It's confusing. We'll just get into the nitty gritty of Old Tom Gin. But before I dive right in, I do feel like there's always a clarification for what exactly, when we talk about gin, what are we talking about? Because I think you need to kind of know that before any of this is going to make sense. We've talked about gin in the past, but just as a little refresher, when you think of gin now, gins that you've probably tried, you probably think of something clear, something that tastes like a Christmas tree, something that's very botanical, very dry. That's the popular style of the day. That's how 9 out of 10 gins today are going to be made. Those are the, when you think of like Tanqueray or Bombay Sapphire or Beefeater, those pretty much adhere to that style, you know?
Right.
You're taking a very neutral spirit, like a vodka, basically, and then you're flavoring it with, has to be juniper, and then whatever botanicals you want around that. So to call modern gin like a flavored vodka isn't really wrong.
All right. Yeah, and the main thing being the juniper.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that that was a hard thing for me to wrap my head around, because in my mind, like, vodka is like a party spirit that's not very respected in cocktails, and then gin is like the pinnacle of like the cocktail spirit. And yet they are practically the same thing, just the nuance of the botanical profile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, gin is more sophisticated. It comes in all your fancy beverages.
And I mean, it's not. It's the same. You know, it's the same thing. It's just got some stuff there in it. But all right. So that's the basic understanding of what gin is now. Now, as we relate to Old Tom gin, I think it's a good time to remind you of what gin used to be. Because if you listened a few weeks back to our Genever episode, we talked about Genever being a predecessor to gin. So Genever comes to us from the Netherlands and Belgium. It started out as sort of a distilled wine made from malted grain, which was introduced to the British palate in like the 1600s. They started tinkering with it, developed a taste for it. Eventually ending up in the London dry style that we now have today. But in that tinkering period where you're transitioning from what Genever was to what gin is now, that's where we find Old Tom Gin.
Somewhere in the middle between liquid Dutch courage and today's modern gin.
Yes.
It developed a medium brand made from, well, basically because of their lack of the availability of grains.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that, because, you know, that's one of the defining characteristics. I mean, I feel like when we're talking about a spirit, I usually start with a bare bones, what is it? And you can't really do that with Old Tom Gin. It's more defined by what it wasn't, what it couldn't be, and then what it became, and more of like a time period. Like, you know, when I first learned about Old Time Gin, I was told that it's a sweet gin. And then I heard from other bartenders, no, it's an aged gin. I'm like, well, is it both? Is it neither? And all of this is true. It can be sweetened. It can be aged. It can be both. It can be neither. It's really just the gin that was produced by the British during the late 18th century into the early 19th century, made with a palate that understood Genever, but along the way to producing modern gin. So you had, and then I think you got to throw in a little bit of pearl clutching, which influences this as well. So we'll get back to that. But so the 18th century, the British were taking that Dutch Genever with its heavy grain base. As you mentioned, they didn't have the readily available, and I mean, to them it was expensive grain, so they started opting for neutral bases, things that you could get those starches and sugars to make alcohol from, you know, whatever you could get, potatoes, sugar beets, whatever you could distill. And then they would add more botanicals than the Genever style called for. Now, that more botanicals was partially because, you know, you get a really nice flavor from this pot-stilled, grain-based, like, spirit that was Genever. When you're just kind of throwing in whatever you can get, you want to throw in some extra stuff to mask that flavor, to create a flavor profile on top of it. And that's really where this heightened botanical profile and the introduction of sugar came in. As gin caught on and was like the thing to drink in London, you wanted to stretch your batch of gin as far as possible. So you'd add some stuff in that was maybe a little seedy, you know, maybe some turpentine, maybe some sulfuric acid.
God, I hope not.
Yeah, no, absolutely, though. And so to mask those fillers, you would just put in a little sugar, a little licorice, heighten the botanical profile, and it would hide all of that stuff that you didn't want to taste. So that's where that sort of sweet and higher botanical profile comes from.
The only thing that was consistent is they still added the juniper.
Yes, that's the only, and that has to be gin. Juniper has to be there. You can't, if you don't have juniper in your mix, you're not making gin. That is, for some reason, the only thing we've ever insisted upon.
But they would add sugar at the end a lot of times, or something that became sugar, whether it's some kind of fruit or something like that, mm-hmm. that would add to add the sugar, extra sugar in there.
Yeah. And eventually, as distilling guidelines were enforced and, you know, quality improved, they would ditch the sugar, and modern gin would come from that. But during this era of this sweetened, questionable gin, gin was also being shipped out. You know, it was very popular in this time period. So they'd store it in barrels to ship it or store it. And while it was never designed to be aged, the simple act of putting it in a barrel and sending it overseas would put some age on it. It's just natural. So a lot of people were drinking gin that had a little bit of age to it, a little bit of barrel, a little bit of a woody quality to it. And that became something associated with this style, this time period of gin, is it wasn't necessarily clear. It might be a little brown, little honey toned because it's mm-hmm. been sitting in a barrel for a while.
So it had no rules like bourbon and tequila have rules. This gin had no rules at all. I mean, it could be aged, could be not aged, could be brown, could be clear, could have sugar, might not have sugar, could be distilled, could be made from some other neutral base.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was really nothing to restrict what you did with this. You just produced it.
Well, and that's why, you know, it's you say all that, it's like, well, then why do we call it Old Tom Gin? Why is it a thing? And I mean, that kind of goes back to, I mentioned there was some pearl clutching. You know, if you remember, this has been, I think almost, it's been a while now. We did a Mother's Day episode where we talked about Mother's Ruin as, it's the same time period, a nickname that gin developed. And it was because, you know, there's all this readily available gin. Everybody was distilling gin. People were distilling gin in their house. This is a wave of outrage at the alcoholism and the drunkenness that was becoming part of British culture. Around the 18th century, it really vilified gin. Like, you know, this is the problem with our society. It's gin. It's not any other spirit. It's not beer. It's gin. And to try to combat this, the government started taxing specifically gin intensely and, like, you know, trying to cut down on these home distillers and, like, you know, illegally produce gin.
Yeah, one of the reasons that Guinness came along and was promoted so heavily was it was a healthy alternative to the their lives being ruined by gin. So drink right. Guinness.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to drink one or the other, you probably can put in a better work day on a few Guinnesses than
it's good for you. Yeah.
Turpentine gin. Definitely better for you. So obviously, as we've learned, whenever you try to make a spirit go away through taxation or outlawing it, it doesn't go away. It just goes underground. So instead of paying the taxes, bars and taverns just sold gin illegally. Now, this sort of fanciful story around the name is that there was this bootlegger by the name of Captain Dudley Bradstreet. And to communicate that he had gin, he hung a black wooden cat on the exterior of his business, but it was like set up with a sort of funnel mechanism through it, so you could put some money in the cat and then he would funnel you some gin out of the cat, like out of the wooden cat's mouth. Mm-hmm. And you know, like cats, old black cats, Tom cats as they were called, like,
right,
it just got this name for, do you have Old Tom? Like, Old Tom became sort of slang for gin at the time when gin was outlawed or hard to get or expensive to make. And other bars caught on to this. They'd put up a wooden black cat as an indicator, like, you can get gin here on the down low.
Yeah, I was surprised when I read that that's where it came from, was the old Tomcat sign that indicated you had gin, and there'd be a slot in the wall, and basically they said a lead pipe that came down. So I guess you'd carry your own glass or whatever, and you'd slip the money through the wall and put your glass under the lead pipe, and out would come a shot.
I was at, like, I think, yes, that is the way that it probably functioned. In my mind, people were just, like, doing, like, a luge off of it, you know, just, like, putting their mouth on it. Like,
no, I'm thinking they carried something to catch it in, you know?
Makes sense. Like, yeah, like, got a little pour, could take it home with you, because that seems very ineffective to have to go and get your one shot from the wall.
Well, I'm sure they had a group standing around outside the walls there. I don't think they just got one shot and went on. They probably kind of hung around, you know?
This is definitely one of those stories that's sort of, it's like, as I said, it's fanciful. Is this exactly where the name Old Tom came from? It's hard to say because it's one of those stories that, like, anything that a liquor brand loves to print on the back of its label, you always have to kind of question. Like, if it sounds good enough to sell a spirit, it might be a lie.
Sure.
But there was also, there was a type of gin that was called Old Tom. There was a brand that was popular around this time. And the distiller was named Old Tom, but he put a little black cat on his label. And the fanciful story that he wrote was that a tomcat fell into the gin and that gave it its name. But the guy was just named Tom. And so it could have been a combination of these things. There was a popular specific brand of gin at the time that was called Old Tom's Gin, or just referred to as Old Tom's Gin because there was a popular distiller named Tom. It got associated with this cat. People started using the cat. Something here. There's truth here somewhere.
Well, I don't think that story is a good story to tell people to get to drink your gin, because right? I do not want gin distilled from a cat's ass. That just does not sound appealing to me at all.
I don't know. Gave it that specific flavor, you know. You just the little cat just took a bath in it.
But you know that whole process. The whole time I'm reading that about those walk up shots through the wall, it reminded me of Savannah. You know, because they have all those walk-up windows at the bars and everything, and the restaurants have those walk-up windows. You don't see that. I haven't seen that anywhere else. I'm sure there's other cities that have that. I guess New Orleans, to some extent, has that along Bourbon Street and stuff. But you don't see that very often. But in Savannah, you walk up to the window, and you just get one to go as you're walking around Savannah.
It reminded me a bit too, and I don't think we've done an episode about this. Maybe because I like to be an escape from the world on this podcast, not talk about it. But during times of plague, like, wineries would have little like holes built in the walls that you could give people wine through when you know to protect yourself from the plague. Like, here's your wine, don't infect me. And during the recent quarantine, because these are still existing in, like, you know, wineries, in old world wineries in, like, Italy and France, they were using them again to hand people wine during COVID. Like, here you go. Get lost.
Just a hand protrudes through the hole.
Yeah, yeah.
There's my wine.
It's a useful thing to have. But, yeah, so, you know, I'm sure there's truth there somewhere, that the name came from somewhere, and it wasn't just an invention of a modern gin brand. But, you know, of course, like a lot of spirits, Old Tom Gin, as it was phased out with the more popular London dry style gin, you know, Geneva continued with its own character. Old Tom was sort of lost. This weird period of experimental, who knows what the hell it is gin, just all got kind of lost to history. Until, of course, you know, through the modern cocktail revival, a reignited interest in old cocktails. A lot of the drinks printed in drink manuals from this time would call specifically for Old Tom Gin. So you have, you know, these classic cocktails from the 1800s, 1900s that would ask for Old Tom Gin. Obviously, modern bartenders started asking, what the hell is Old Tom Gin and how can I get some for my bar? Mm-hmm. And that led to modern distillers doing the research and trying to make their version of Old Tom Gin. And it's a newer category. I feel like it's more of that second, maybe third wave of cocktail culture that we've had revived. But it's not just like small niche distilleries that are doing it now. Tanqueray has an Old Tom Gin on the market. Mm-hmm. And you really are getting probably the old world experience, because it is just as varied and all over the place and no rules as it used to be. Some of them are significantly aged. Some of them have a touch of the barrel. Some of them are very sweet. Some of them have a little bit of sugar. Some of them don't have added sugar.
Yeah, some of them pick different kinds of barrels, like sometimes old bourbon barrels or old sherry barrels to age it in. So they're, of course, they're picking up different profiles from it. Yeah. But also kind of liken this to the revival of this, not so much in America as it is in the UK, but they have like craft distilleries that are making Old Tom Gin, kind of the way we have craft breweries that are making all the different kinds of beer, Whereas basically you had like three different styles of beer in America forever. Now you got everything coming out of these craft breweries. And the same way over there that they're doing with the distilled, with the Old Tom gin developing it.
Well, and I mean here too. Some of my, they couldn't be more different, but two of my favorite Old Tom gins, Bar Hill Distillery does one. And they use a lot of honey in their distilling. So they have an aged version. I think they call it their Tomcat. But they have just a Old Tom style gin that's not aged, but it has a very distinct honey sweetness to it. And it's definitely like you've got to factor in the sweetness if you're cocktailing with it. But it's delicious because it's got those honey notes that are very earthy and round. Mm-hmm. Whereas then you've got Ransom Old Tom Gin, which is another one of my favorites, but they couldn't be more different. Now, Ransom's cool because we've mentioned David Wondrich before. At some point, we've got to do a full episode on him. He's a cocktail historian. He's had a big hand in digging into all this old information and bringing a lot of lost stuff back to us. He worked with Ransom to develop their Old Tom Gin, and it's very malty. You know, it's got those Geneva notes to it. It's aged. It's got a very, to me, it's like a whiskey flavor profile almost. Like, I can make an old fashioned out of the Ransom Old Tom Gin. I would not do that with the Bar Hill. You could do that with the Ransom one. Mm-hmm. And it's cool because they're both delicious spirits. They both are called Old Tom Gin. They could not be more different. And they have completely different, amazing uses in cocktails.
Well, it said that was one of the things that they clarified. They said that the malt-based gins are more like a flavored whiskey than a flavored vodka.
Yeah, absolutely.
They drink like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's, once again, you know, if you've tried gin once and, you know, it tasted like a Christmas tree to you, there's a lot of gin that doesn't. There's a lot of gin-adjacent things that don't. And that's definitely, when you get into Geneva, when you get into the grain-based gins and then the aged grain-based gins, you're... there's very subtle differences that are separating it from a whiskey. You know, they're really, that's not these giantly different categories, because if you're distilling from grain, if you're barrel aging, the only real difference there is you've got a botanical profile in the gin. You've at least got to have juniper, and that's kind of it. It's kind of the only thing that's separating whiskey from gin at that point.
After that, the only thing stopping you is your imagination.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's kind of a roll the dice. If, you know, if you've got a couple of bottles of Old Tom Gin at your liquor store, you've probably got a couple completely different experiences.
Yeah, I noticed that Ransom Old Tom Gin that you were talking about, that it's made from corn and barley, and it's distilled in a copper pot. And besides the juniper, it has orange peel, lemon peel, coriander, cardamom, and Angelica root, and it ages 6 to 12 months in French wine oak barrels.
Interesting.
And bottles at 44% ABV.
Well, I mean, it's good. I feel like I sold the category short for so long because, as I mentioned, when I was first told about it, it was like, oh, it's sweet gin. I'm like, oh, I don't, like, that's, so that's like a liqueur? It's like a gin liqueur? That, I don't
no. want
to base a cocktail on that, but it's not. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, because I always think of liqueurs as being kind of syrupy.
Yeah. Well, but I sort of wrote it off in my mind as something that if I have to factor out sweetness elsewhere because the gin has weird sweetness to it, I don't know how to work with that. And even the ones that do have like extra sweetness to them, it's not, they don't brush up against liqueurs. They're sweet in the same way that like brandy is sweeter than some other base spirits, you know, like it's sweet in the way that a base spirit can be sweet.
Right. It's not so much that it's sweet as it doesn't have that same sharpness as like a London Dry gin or something like that. It has that sharp, almost bitterness, and it just rounds that off. So you don't have that, but it's not like it's sweet. Like you would do away with, if you were mixing it in a cocktail, you'd do away with the simple syrup because of it or something.
No. And I mean, some of them you factor it out. Like when I've mixed with the Bar Hill, the honey based Old Tom Gin, I'll cut a little bit of the sugar out of a recipe because it does have that added sweetness to it. And even like a viscosity to it. But you wouldn't do that with some of these other ones. So that's, it's, you know, it's still not any more regulated. there's no rules on what you can call Old Tom Gin, really. I mean, that's, you can call something gin if it's got juniper and it's a distilled spirit. You can call something Old Tom Gin if it's got juniper and it's a distilled spirit. People are using that term to indicate something to you. But even the something is kind of, might be sweeter, might be older, might be both.
Well, I got the top 12 is this group judged the top 12 Old Tom Gins, and just the descriptions of each one, they're so varied. It's like rich in juniper, herbal, sweet. Now these are each separate one: juniper and spicy, sweet, sweet and woody, rich and spicy, sweet and fruity, spicy and juniper. So, I mean, the descriptions of them vary all the way. Now, the one that they picked was the number one Old Tom Gin on the market was Hammer & Son Old English Gin. They say that it's made from a 1783 recipe. It's distilled at the Langley Distillery in England in copper pot stills with 11 botanicals, including juniper, coriander, lemon and orange peels, licorice, and cinnamon. And post-distillation, a small amount of sugar is added to create that Old Tom Gin. Then it's sold in cleaned former champagne bottles and is sealed with wax.
Wow, that's fancy.
Yeah.
That copper pot still, you've mentioned it a few times, and that's one of those things, that's a holdover from, like, Geneva was usually made in a copper pot still. Mm-hmm. And that, when we talk about stills, there's copper pot stills and there's column stills. There are other types of stills, but those are the two. When we talk about flavor differences produced by stills, that's usually what we're talking about. A copper pot still produces more focused, like, concentrated flavors, a little bit more, like, developed flavor, whereas a column still is what you use to, like, make a very clean spirit. You know, mm-hmm. for vodka, you want to use, like, triple distilled. We're distilling in column stills. We want to remove all of those flavor molecules possible. We want the cleanest thing possible. So
right.
most modern, like London Dry gin, is probably going to be made in a column still. When we're talking about gin made in a pot still, already that's going to produce a completely different flavor profile. So I think that's cool to think about, because when you think of gin shorthand, you're probably thinking of something that is distilled to remove flavor, but that's mm-hmm. not going to be the case with a pot still.
Yeah, you're just catching the alcohol vapors themselves when you're yeah. making it real distilled. And with this, yeah. you want those flavors cooked in there.
Exactly. Well, so now that we have a sort of understanding of what it is, maybe
all over the map.
Okay, you know, how do you drink it? How do you drink it? You take the plunge, you buy a bottle. What are you going to do with that? Well, you know, as I mentioned, the interesting thing is that a lot of these classic cocktails that we just put London Dry Gin in automatically were probably first devised using an Old Tom Gin, because we're talking about really the height of cocktail development. You know, you're talking about like 1800s into like early 1900s. There's a lot of classic cocktails born around this time. So a lot of these cocktails were probably first made with a sweeter or maybe an aged, an Old Tom style gin. So I think the first place you can start is really just any gin cocktail you like. You can try subbing in your Old Tom gin. You know, you can start simply, you can try it in a Tom Collins. You know, if you get one of those nice aged versions, you can try it in a Negroni or even like an Old Fashioned build. You can mix it up in, because it does have those similarities with whiskey. But in the realm of maybe the most well-known Old Tom Gin cocktail, it's funny because it's also another missing link in cocktail culture, and that is the Martinez.
Yeah, and I kept seeing that popping up when I was doing my research for this, and I don't think I've ever had a Martinez or ever seen that on a menu anywhere.
Well, it's usually considered to be the predecessor of the Martini. So the Martinez came first. And it's not like many drinks. It has conflicting origin stories. There are several people that sort of claim it. The earliest print version of the recipe, the reference of something called a Martinez, comes to us from a barman, O.H. Byron. This was in like the late 1800s. And he basically just described it as a Manhattan variant. So if you like a Manhattan but you want it with gin, here's what I do. And he called it Old Time Gin, and it had vermouth, curacao, and Angostura bitters. So not how we make a Manhattan today. But that was his recipe. Now then, in 1887, you have storied barman Jerry Thomas putting it in print as his cocktail. But his version calls for maraschino liqueur instead of curacao. Mm-hmm. A little bit different proportions, but still that idea of an old Tom gin, a sweet vermouth. They're referring to just vermouth as vermouth at the time, but the style of vermouth that was popular in America, these are both being made in America at the time, was the sweet vermouth. We really hadn't gotten a taste for the dry vermouth yet. Mm-hmm. In 1888, we have Harry Johnson publishing the new and improved Illustrated Bartender's Manual. And perhaps it could have just been a typo, but he has a drink that he calls the Martine. So M-A-R-T-I-N-E, we're just missing the Z. And this one has a heavier portion of vermouth and gin and much lighter elements of curacao. So we're kind of cutting out that sweetness. We're getting closer to what we think of a martini as now, as just being mainly gin and vermouth, not really any modifiers. So the idea is that from here, we had this concept of the Martinez, old Tom gin, some sort of sweeter modifier, and then the Martine branches off into the Martini, where we're getting more gin plus vermouth, very little modifiers, and over time they develop as two separate drinks. The Martinez sort of phased out as palates grew a lot drier, as dry vermouth became popular, the Martini caught on. So not a distinct origin point, but, and I mean, similar to old Tom gin, early recipes were sort of all over the place. Maybe curacao, maybe maraschino liqueur, maybe orange bitters, maybe Angostura. Sometimes dry vermouth gets thrown in the mix, but at a well-stocked bar today, what you would get really should be old Tom gin, sweet vermouth, some maraschino liqueur, and orange or Angostura bitters with a lemon twist. So... Not wouldn't look like a martini that you probably had.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had one of those.
I don't think many. I've never been asked to make one. The only time I ever did make one was like for educational purposes, you know, when I was learning about cocktails. Like I had a bar manager that. Have you ever had a martini or a Martinez? That's the predecessor of the martini. And he made one. I'm like, that tastes nothing like a martini, but interesting.
Well, and I've never come across old Tom gin, but it may have been there, but I wouldn't have picked up on it. I might have just seen that and thought that was the brand name or something like that and not really picked up on the fact it's a style of gin because I had never, you know, didn't know that distinction, you know, that I thought it, even from our stuff that we've covered that you had Genevers. And then gin developed from Genevers. But this isn't like somebody went back and started doctoring gin. This was like the transformation from Genevers to old Tom gin to the dry gin that we know now.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the intermediate.
Well, and I think it makes sense that it's only it's sort of later in the cocktail revival that we get old Tom gin coming back and having a place in drinks, because so much of the cocktail revival was a rejection of sweet. Like, you mm-hmm. know, we want serious cocktail structure, and that simplification of it to just a like confusing sweeter version of gin when we've got dry aggressive botanical gin right there. Like I think it makes sense sort of psychologically why it took a minute to have its time, and I'm glad to see it out there and like something that we're experimenting with. But I mean, even like the IBA, the International Bartenders Association, that basically decides this is how a drink is made. They call for London dry gin in a Martinez mm-hmm. because, you know, I think as an awareness to old Tom gin isn't a thing. It is. It absolutely is a thing. But it took a while to become a thing again.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know. But I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I was gifted a bottle of Ransom forever ago, and it took me forever to try it because I'm like, old Tom gin, I don't like sweet things. I'm like, oh, this is, it's just on the rocks, you know, with some bitters. It's mm-hmm. it's great on its own. It's great as an old fashioned play. It's a cool category in that it is surprising that you kind of do have to learn each individual product to know how to work with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can, you know, look for the different styles, whether it's, you know, aged in wine barrels, aged in bourbon barrels, not aged at all, right out of the still.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, it's just more a moniker that is telling you that there's something different from London Dry Gin here going on. But what that different thing is, you probably need to turn the bottle over and look at least.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that, like we've talked about with some others, just because you've had one, whether you didn't like it or not, doesn't mean that you've had them all. So, you know, don't get turned off on it just because of one. It may have been a completely different formulation.
Yeah, and if you don't like gin, you might like Old Tom Gin.
Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if it drinks more like whiskey.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. There's this is a good. It's a good. I think also for a snowy day. It's a winter gin.
Yeah, from one Old Tom to another. Drink up.
There you go. all right. Well, thank you for joining us as always. Yes. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you for having me on this snowy day.
Yeah. Well, now I don't want to go into work. I want to cozy up with a. Old Tom Gin cocktail.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't want to go outside the house.
But alas. All right. Well, thank y'all. If you want to find us on our socials, we are neatthebooscast@gmail.com. If you want to email us, neatboozcast on Twitter and Instagram. If you like Old Tom Gin and you have an opinion about it or you want to talk to people about it, you can do that.
At Neat the Boozecast group on Facebook.
There you go. And if you want to support us, get some additional content, we have a Patreon. You can check that out. We've got our companion videos are going to be a Patreon exclusive moving forward. So if you like those, you gotta pay for them now. It's just a dollar. It's a dollar a month for all those videos. The old ones.
What a bargain!
Well, I mean, the old ones are still going to be free. You can go back and watch those. But the new ones moving forward are going to be over there. Plus a lot of other stuff, stickers, coasters, all sorts of fun stuff. So if you're interested, we would love if you check that out. If not, no problem. We're still here for you on the podcast every week.
Talking about booze right in your ears.
That won't stop. That's not going anywhere. That's free forever. Hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Meep. Yeah, I think New York could be for that. Just have a slot. Just get, $50 in and get a shot of liquor.
I mean, yeah, with the prices now. I don't know in the time of Corona if I want some mysterious hands giving me a shot of...
From a lead pipe?
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're kind of bringing that back. I think we're going to get the cocktail to go legislation back. I think we're going to be allowed to do that. So that's a cleaner version of that same idea, right?
Yeah. Let's hope so.
Yeah, that was great. For a while when I was going on, I would just like walk by Angel Share, amazing bar in East Village, and just grab a little bottle of one of their fantastic cocktails.
Yeah.
Just take this home with me. That's great.